I heartily endorse this event or product.
Ahoy, hoy, everybody. Welcome to Talking Simpsons, where we tried to make podcasting fun. I am one of your hosts, Bob Mackey, who's here with me today.
Wannabe Harvard Lampooner, Henry Gilbert.
That's right. It's too late for both of us. But this is our Season 7 wrap-up, everybody. We do one of these for every season, except for one, I believe, where we reflect upon our favorite and least favorite moments and characters, and also talk about what was in the news at the time and anything I'm missing about these wrap-ups. It's
and
been a while.
What our favorite and least favorite episodes were, and our MVP of the season pick.
That's right. So let's get into it, Henry. Season 7. What did you think? I can't believe we're at the end of it. It felt like it just started.
It does, right? It feels, I mean, we have had the season 7 span has just been a long and very busy one of us launching a bunch of new stuff and launching both What a Cartoon and the Talking Futurama podcast, plus ending Talking Critic.
And doing 3 live shows. So we've been very busy during this season 7 production.
Yeah. But I mean, I'd been waiting for season 7 the whole time. I think it is one of the most like even keeled great seasons there is. Like, even when I was trying to think of like worst episode, I couldn't even go with the easy one of like the clip show, because the clip show wasn't the worst episode.
I feel like it's they plateaued at a very, very, very high level, mm-hmm. where there are no giant peaks or low valleys. It's just all very, very high. So coming up with a favorite episode, I was just like, oh my God, I have no freaking clue. Like, none of these jump out to me as my favorite because they're all so good.
And I think Oakley and Weinstein did achieve their goal of getting back to basics, simplifying things with the family, all that stuff. It was a season defined by more boring mundanity details than silliness.
I mean, in terms of the tone of the show, I think this hits my sweet spot. I've said on record on the show that season 7 is my favorite. Now I think it might be 6. Six is a bit more uneven. I think while I love the tone of Oakley and Weinstein's jokes more than Merkin's, I do kind of appreciate how cutting Merkin can be and how how a little more acidic he could be with his humor. So it's weird. Like, I think 6 hits higher highs, but there are some lower lows. But I think overall 6 could be my favorite now. But I 7 would be second place. Mm-hmm. But it's still so hard for me to say.
I miss the cruelty of Merkin a bit. This, especially when we did a few Merkin episodes a season in this broadcast season, like Radioactive Man, just the meanness of statements, and also like his interest in doing FU gags. Like, it was always weird in Oakley Weinstein showrun episodes when they tried to do like an FU, like, oh, you gotcha, you thought this was the joke. It doesn't come with the same kind of feeling of like playful spite that Merkin has of like, FU audience, you thought this was the episode.
They're much more gentle nerds, Harvard nerds. With a different sense of humor, which I still like. But yeah, in terms of jokes, I think season 6 is my favorite. In terms of just sheer plotting and story ideas, I think 7 could be my favorite, just in terms of how there are very few B plots, and the B plots usually hook up to the A plots, and I feel like they do a lot more work to justify things like, why is this character here? Why did they go to this place? Why is this happening at this location? Like, they do a lot of work that later seasons would just ditch.
Oakley and Weinstein are Simpsons nerds who wanted to really dig into the history of it and get focused on it. And as Dan Graney put it in our interview, which was another thing in season 7, we did so many freaking interviews.
We did.
My goodness. And as he put it, like, it was, he said that Mike Scully de-Harvard-fied the show. This was the Harvard-ifying up of it, because like Merkin sort of de-Harvard-fied it by not hiring only Harvard writers.
That jerk. That's what Futurama was for. But yeah, Bill Oakley told us in his, I think, our second interview that this was going to be their only season that they ran. So I think they went into this saying, let's use all of our best ideas, all the things we always wanted to do with the show, which is why season 8 is a little bit different in tone and a little bit different in what they're doing with that, with those characters. And they're taking apart a lot more than they did with this season.
In season 8, it seemed more of like, well, what other ideas do we have in this same vein? Like, how can we, they were more into the idea of breaking toys. I think in season 8 too, they were of the idea of like, well, this is definitely going to end soon, so...
Yeah, and I said, I think on our interview as well with Oakley, the second interview we did, which is on Patreon, if you talk, we talked to him, and I really wanted to know, like, what ideas do you have for episodes that you didn't get to make? And he was like, we made all of them.
They
like,
did them all.
There was one he could think of, but it's like, we used all of our ideas on these 40-some episodes we made.
Yeah, they were more in danger of just running out of ideas, like, Lisa Military Academy?
Yeah.
And
which
I mean,
was sort of ripped from the headlines, though.
Yes, yeah. Well, that's also that feels like the kind of painting into the corner thing that lets you okay episodes. Homer's Enemy, this is talking about season 8, but Homer's Enemy and Principal and the Pauper, I love both of them, but I feel like you have to pick one of those in your season. You can't destroy the comedic reality of your show in two episodes.
That is true. That is true. I guess technically it's Error season 9, the Principal and the
Pauper.
Sure,
sure.
So, but in terms of production history, which is what we're devoted to, you're right. Yeah, they did break a lot of stuff in the show, mm-hmm. which in a playful way, not in a mean way, not in a like no one can have this now way. They just like, here's a fun idea. Here's the last thing we can do with this character. Let's just do it now.
Well, though, in season 7, Oakley Weinstein and their team, they're having more fun playing with the toys they've been given. And in season 8, they're more like, they're thinking, well, what happens if I do melt this G.I. Joe? That'll be interesting. Let's melt my Kirk Van Houten action figure. See how he does after that.
I guess season 7 was just like, well, they're asking questions that no one ever asked. Like, who is Homer's mother? And like, what's the real story behind Itchy and Scratchy and things like that? Yeah. But you're right, season 8's more like taking the G.I. Joes out with the BB gun and seeing what you can do. But man, like, such a great season of television.
My God.
And
yeah.
They really, so season 3 is another great season. It's what they modeled this season after. And I think they completely succeeded. It has the same sort of more down to earth tone, mm-hmm. but still like some great jokes and great character moments and like just a lot of using B characters we don't see that often. So I feel like they did everything they were supposed to do. And like, man, I love 7 so much and I love revisiting all of these shows.
Yeah. In the flow of episodes, the choice of episodes, they choose, this storylines they chose to make and the orders they did in them, you notice the theme that they had like 3 in a row of like, this is a Marge episode, then a Bart episode, then a Lisa episode, then a Homer episode.
Yeah, yeah.
Like it was a clear choice made by them to space it out that way. And I love that as just a concocting a season, and it makes it clear they're not just going from episode to episode to episode. They have a further, they're planning out for the
different. Yeah, they had a plan and they're like, we want for each season that we want to have an Itchy and Scratchy episode, a Sideshow Bob episode, an episode that breaks format. They had these different ideas they wanted to apply to each of their seasons, which I love that they went into it with that much thoughtfulness, and it really shows off in these seasons.
Mm-hmm. Even in the deleted scenes, which you guys can either listen to the audio version of that or watch the video if you're at the $10 level, check those out. But okay, I guess let's get into the news that happened this season. There honestly was not a ton. I had to dig a little deep. But first off, the highest rated episode and the lowest rated episode
season. Yeah.
Treehouse of Horror 6 was the highest rated one, which, you know, they had a marketing bonanza for Homer cubed. Like they advertised it so much. I couldn't turn away from
it. It was an event.
Yeah.
Do we have the actual millions of viewers for that or no?
It was 20.
Wow.
That one actually broke 20. While meanwhile, lowest rated, this one hurts as a Dorkerino, but
oh, no.
It was 22 short films.
Oh, no.
It had about half the viewership almost of Treehouse of Horror 6.
Was it that much significantly lower than other lower?
By about 2 points.
Okay.
Yeah, it was. I mean, it came at a bad time in the schedule. Like, it was one of those right before May sweeps season,
okay.
So it missed some stuff, but yeah, I think I wonder too. I, as somebody who loves it being esoteric, I hate to blame esoteric, but maybe that did turn off some viewers.
But you know, steam hams will live forever, despite how low it was rated. I mean, but still, 10 million people watched it on that one night, and then millions, millions, millions more after that. So it got around, folks. It's fine.
Then when it comes to exits and entries into this season, so we lost Greg Daniels and Wes Archer to King of the Hill with
You're
Mike
right.
Judge. Wes Archer was gone by the end of the season. Jeffrey Lynch left to go to Hollywood, though he would work on a couple Futurama episodes in 99. And Brent Forrester would leave for Mr. Show.
Yeah, to write the companions. What's the name of that Mr. Show sketch?
Oh, the the person and their companions.
Yeah.
Their two companions.
Written and on acid.
Yes.
While on acid.
Him and Dino worked pretty well together.
Yeah.
I wonder, he has to be like the square of the pair.
I would hope so, the Harvard nerd. But so like in season four, man, that wrap-up episode, we talked about like 20 writers leaving. That was really just it for the writing team?
Pretty much, okay. Yeah. Other than the guy who got fired for hating the critic.
Bob Cushell. He has a name, Henry. Yes, he has a name.
I just recall how Mike Reiss referred to him as, who is that guy? Well, he's a guy who got fired after a year.
He went on to have an amazing writing career. Just being fired from The Simpsons can get you places.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. Once you've got that on your resume, you're opening doors.
We should interview Bob.
Yeah.
Let's do it.
Oh, man. I want to hear all the shit.
Give us the dirt on Merkin. Wait, we still want to talk to Merkin.
Let's talk to Merkin first, and then talk to
Bob Cushell.
But of some new hires, there was, of course, our friend of the show, Dan Graney.
That's right.
Steve Tompkins,
uh-huh.
Rich Appel, and Rachel Polito, who would soon become the Mrs. Bill Oakley.
All went on to do amazing things. I think Rich Appel might have the most prolific and successful career out of all of them.
Oh, yes. Yeah, I mean, he's cashing those big Family Guy paychecks for sure. And on the animation side, Mike B. Anderson and Dominic Pulcino directed their first episodes of season. I believe Anderson is still with the show.
I think so. There are two Andersons, and I think they're both. So Bob Anderson and Mike B. Anderson, not related. I think they're both still with the show.
More Andersons directing Simpsons episodes than women, I'd say. Actually, that's not true. There's two women.
Yes. Probably a lot more now.
Yeah. And Dominic Pulcino, meanwhile, would ankle the Simpsons and go straight onto that Family Guy gravy train.
Yummy.
And then when it comes to awards this year, at the 48th Annual Emmy Awards, as we said on the episode, Treehouse of Horror 6 famously lost the animated Emmy to Pinky and the Brain Christmas.
That's a great special, though. But Bill Oakley was right. They should have submitted Mother Simpson. It was more of an awards baity show. Not to say the episode is treacly or like, you know.
It's an amazing episode.
It's no Round Springfield written to win an Emmy. Yes. It was actually written with sentimentality behind it.
Though, I do think no matter what episode they submitted, I think they would have just lost because it seemed like an off year for The Simpsons, meaning voters would be like, I voted for Simpsons last year. Let somebody else win. Like,
yeah, the previous year, Lisa's Wedding won, correct? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I have a feeling in that primetime animated section, most voters are just like, Simpsons again, I'll vote somewhere else. Like, so who knows? I think my guess is they wouldn't have won either way.
Yeah, you're probably right about that.
And meanwhile, speaking of not winning, Senor Burns lost Outstanding Original Music to the Bye Bye Birdie TV movie song, which they added. Bye Bye Birdie is a classic old musical. For the TV movie version, they actually added a song. They wrote a new song for it called Let's Settle Down.
That should be illegal.
Yeah. And that's what won. That is illegal. Like,
I'm no huge fan of Bye Bye Birdie, but I have to say that seems like sacrilege.
I know, to add an extra song, but apparently it is liked by some of the, like in some current productions, they still do that song in it.
Like, I do like Anne Margarock from the Flintstones. She's a real looker.
Meanwhile, The Simpsons became the first animated series to ever be awarded a Peabody.
Really? For an episode or just in general?
Just for the series.
Okay.
It's, you remember, as a Mystery Science nerd, that's the only reason we've heard of the Peabody.
That's all they would talk about because they couldn't win an Emmy.
Yeah, they were never going to get an Emmy. No Emmy voter would watch that show for 2 hours.
Yeah.
Like, that's why, which is too bad.
They wouldn't get it.
Yeah, no, those bunch of old buzzards, no nothing.
They're all dead.
Yeah, how you doing down there, boys? So, but yes, The Simpsons became first cartoon to win a Peabody in 1996.
Nice.
And lastly of the awards, Lisa the Vegetarian won a Genesis Award.
That's right, yes.
Which is a nice progressive award.
I think Whacking Day won a Genesis Award, too.
That's true.
Whacking.
Yes. Yeah, whacking. And that's the kind of award they want to win. Unlike the, I love that Dave Merkin story of the Lisa on Ice episode winning a Family Values Award and then him shitting all over.
Didn't he just go there to yell at them? Like,
yes,
you didn't get it.
You know, this isn't for you. Fuck you. Also in programming news, Martin finally rejoin The Simpsons in its last season as a post show again. It got moved to the 8:30 slot after The Simpsons.
Before the troubles happened with Martin and on-screen girlfriend.
I talked about in the news thing about Martin had delirium.
Oh, right.
Or exhaustion.
It was all happening around this time, you're right.
Yes. So that's also what happens when House of Bug and Ned and Stacy and The Critic, they all get canceled. Like, put Martin back there. It's on its last legs.
Mike Reiss has been talking about House of Buggin in every interview I've heard him on, including ours.
Yes, he can't stand it.
He finds the idea of preposterous. House of Buggin.
Yes, it's like, look, I'm no... Of that era of John Leguizamo, I hate him too, but... To say that show is ridiculous, it's like, well, it was the inheritor to In Living Color. Like, that's what it was.
Oh, my God. In Living Color was on at the bar last night, and I was like, this entire show should be arrested.
Yeah.
It's like, I don't want to go into too much detail, but there was a joke. There was an entire sketch. It was late era In Living Color, so you know it's good.
Ooh.
And there was an entire sketch where the teacher was, let's just say he was intellectually challenged, and including having his arm curled up in the classic, I'm hitting myself with my curled up arm pose.
Classic.
And then trying to write on the chalkboard, but being very disabled. And that was the entire joke. So thanks, In Living Color, for making us laugh at disabled people all over again.
Boy, I wonder if I'd rather watch that or Mad TV for cringiness.
Oh, boy.
Like, I thought half, there's tons of great performers on Mad TV, but I thought half the performances were just like, well, time for a racial caricature.
Yes. I think I might have enjoyed the very large son.
Yes.
That was the only character I think I really can sink my teeth into. But Miss Swan, I'm glad Alex Borstein could move on from that character and do better things.
Yeah. I liked Will Sasso as Kenny Rogers on Jackass. That was funny.
Did he play John Madden on that show too?
No, that was Frank Caliendo.
Okay.
You know what? I think they both did it. When they lost Will Sasso as a fat guy, they got Frank Caliendo to be that.
And actually, going on too long about Living Color, but there was like a fat guy I've never... Sorry, I'm being insensitive. There was a larger gentleman, comedian, sketch actor I'd never seen before in my life outside of that one season. I'm like, is he dead now? Like, they clearly needed a Farley. Like, we need a Farley on this show.
Get one of those guys. Yeah, you know what? I want to apologize to you. I am overweight, so sometimes I feel like I just say fat guy, it's fine. Like, it's not, I hate being judged by my weight, so I shouldn't be passing that along.
I don't like to make anyone feel bad, except for mean people.
Yes, except for bad people like Steve Miller.
Yes, we got a negative comment about my comments about Steve Miller, and I stand by them. He's an evil, evil man.
But also this season, Doris Grau passed away, as we talked about it.
Aww.
8 episodes after Team Homer, I believe she was the first recurring character on the show, the actor, to pass away on it.
If there was a season 3 of The Critic, it would be weird to not have Doris there.
Yeah.
Or like a new Doris.
I think they, if they had made season 3 at the time, she would have lived just long enough to record her voice for it.
I guess maybe the entire.
If they worked at, well, if I was Al Jean and Mike Reiss and said, like, let's get every Doris line in the can as soon as possible.
Yes.
Like, I think that's what they would do. But
not a lot of foresight in hiring an 80-year-old chain smoker. Although, again, they did replace her with Tress MacNeille, and then they did change the character's name because I think they're like, oh, this is distasteful. We're just having her voice this dead woman's role. But Tress MacNeille needs to live the Doris Grau lifestyle to sound like Doris Grau. Maybe in 20 years, she'll sound like Doris Grau.
Maybe.
But man, what a voice.
She's more putting on a voice for it than just speaking with a real voice. Yes. At first they had her return as Lunch Lady Doris, but now she is Lunch Lady Dora.
I think you can find an angry No Homers Club post about how they were ruining Doris Grau's memory by just recasting. They would never recast the Phil Hartman role. I felt like it was kind of sexist that they would do that.
Yeah, and
in a way.
I feel like they learned their lesson. Like, they didn't recast Marsha Wallace. Like, they knew.
Yeah.
You know, she has such a specific voice, too. It can't be redone.
But I will say, so we switch up roles in this network a lot, and I get clips for some stuff. Henry gets clips for other stuff. And I did all the Talking Critic stuff. I was producer on that. And I tried to get as much Doris Grau as I could in every episode because I know it's like there's only so much Doris Grau to go around, and I want to feature it all in these episodes.
I think we have one more line from her, I believe, and that's in the... Lisa Sachs, how she got her Sachs episode. I forget the name of that
What's
one.
The line?
But, Man, I know she's there. Because it was like the last Jean and Reese one. So, all right. So there weren't a ton of licenses going around this year, but this was a transition year for Simpsons video games.
Yeah.
So at the start of this season, it in the middle of 1995, was the final acclaimed Simpsons game. We played it, the Itchy and Scratchy game.
Oof. I actually beat the first stage, and it's just very confusing as to what you do. Yes. But it's actually, once you get down to it, it's a very easy game, but it's just not, it's not fun to look. I mean, okay, the graphics are great. I'll say that much. They tried. The music is awful, and there's like nothing to really do in the game. It's bad.
Yeah, it's no fun to play. I mean, at least the violence and levels make more sense than just Bart going places, which most Simpsons games were then.
Was Virtual Bart last year in
this
timeline?
It was 94, okay, yeah. So that was 94.
That's a rotten game.
Itchy and Scratchy game was 95. The only other game we talked about in season 6 wrap-up was the miniature golf game.
Oh, you're right.
But this was on Super NES and Game Gear. I think Genesis version.
We're transitioning to the multimedia era, so yes. Virtual Springfield will be 97, I think.
Yes, but in between those two was the first Fox Interactive quote-unquote game. So it's one of our first interviews on the Patreon, and I want to send folks back to it.
Right.
Paul Provenzano, we talked with him. He was a producer on so many Simpsons games, first with Acclaim, and as Paul told us, Fox eventually realized, like, why are we licensing Acclaim to make crap Simpsons games when we could make them internally and get all the money?
Why are we making these games in Salt Lake City, Utah?
Yeah, exactly. Though, as Fox would later learn, the reason they don't do that is they don't want to risk they don't want to pay the money up front to get all the money. But at the time, they decided, we're going to start our own Fox Interactive Studios, and we'll make Simpsons games here. So they hired Paul Provenzano and some other folks who had worked on the Simpsons games at Acclaim and to work internally. And they get the engine for the 1994 video game, Felix the Cat's Cartoon Toolbox.
Okay.
And they turned that into the July 1996 video game, The Simpsons Cartoon Studio.
I do recall seeing this, but I knew how these programs worked, and I was not interested. Yeah, right. I mean, the cartoons you can make are basically like Mario Paint. You just you drag around existing animations and have them do a thing in order, but it's still, I mean, I guess if you're a kid at the time, it might have been kind of cool. I guess technically I was a kid at the time, but super interesting.
When I think of 1996, I feel like my mind, I didn't have a CD-ROM drive until the next year so I could finally play Virtual Springfield. But in 1996, the idea of I can cut and paste character animations in different backgrounds with different lines and then have it be my own cartoon that I export to a disc.
I had my fill with the Tiny Toon Adventures cartoon studio for
that
the
NES. That was
what
turned me off to it, yeah.
Yeah, it's like, this is too much work. And also, the people who made this game would later make Echo the Dolphin, and I don't like them. I have to say, like, in terms of Simpsons timelines and where we line up, your computer thing made me think, the summer of 96 is when we got our first family computer with the internet. We had no computer in the house. So from season 8 onwards, that's when I was on the internet as a Simpsons fan.
Oh,
so I can talk about being on all TV Simpsons and and also being angry then. But not angry at the show, angry at people who were mad at the show.
Oh, last thing I'll say about Cartoon Studio, though, they had I watched a few Let's Plays of it on YouTube, and there are some good animations in there.
Speed runs.
It's people making their own cartoons. Yeah. But the back of the box says that it has real Simpsons animators draw it, and when you watch some of the animation cycles, you're like, yeah, this does look correct. There's especially, you'll like this, Bob, there is a Skinner butt swinging thing to set up for him getting hit with something.
We need to turn all of those into animated GIFs if they're not by now.
It should be those. And there's backgrounds. And also, it was the first time the full cast recorded stuff for it, as Paul told us about too, that some liked it more than others. Uh-huh. And we obviously figured out he was talking about Harry Shearer.
Yeah, I mean, this is the era, you're right, in which they would have to get the entire cast in to record like episodes worth of material, especially for things like Hit and Run and Road Rage. The Simpsons game, which is not very good.
It became a lot harder to be a Simpson. You had to be a Simpson voice actor, you had to work 5 hours a day. I kid. They deserve every dollar they're getting.
They need help lifting all those bags of money.
But they were directly working out of Gracie Films, which also allowed Matt Groening to take even more of a hands-on role with it as he had done with the Acclaim ones. And guys, listen to that Paul Provenzano interview, but I loved how he said, graining rhymes with complaining, as they said around the the office.
And I mean, all of us complaining made for some great games, right?
Oof, yeah.
One of them is pretty good.
How much worse would they have been without his complaining?
That's a good point. They could have been much worse.
Well, I think one thing that helped Simpson games reach a level of quality, at least higher, I'm not saying good, but a higher level of quality, was when actual writers for the show were gamers. Like, I do think the Simpsons game, I wouldn't play it again right now either, but I at least think it was helped that like Matt Selman was one of the writers on it, and he knows what video games are and can make jokes about it.
And at least getting the writers involved at some level was important. I believe one of the games we covered, I forget which one it was, but there was like a Simpsons guy on the staff of the game, but he was like the lowest rung, like barely worked on the show, but they at least went that far. But in the future, they would have actual real ass writers from the show write a ton of jokes and material and stories.
Yeah. Though that would happen less. I can't imagine that happening now, because that Simpsons game came at just the right time for when EA was like, we're making Hollywood production, we're paying Hollywood prices. Then 5 years later, like, ooh, don't want to pay those Hollywood prices anymore. Let's go back to non-union writers.
There's a ton of like original animation in that Simpsons game, though. Like, maybe more than an episode's worth of real Simpsons animation in that game.
Yeah. And every voice actor, unlike with The Ride, which came out around the same time Harry Shearer actually participated.
Yeah, and Matt Groening's in it too, doing a voice.
It's, you just watch a playthrough of it, folks. Don't play it.
It's not terrible. It's just like the most mediocre of its time thing in the universe.
Yes. Last bit of news here is the commercials. What commercials came out during this one?
Oh.
And it's, again, a low valley for The Simpsons commercial-wise. No, they basically took 2 years off from Butterfinger commercials.
Weird.
They didn't have any toy deals with any fast food folks either. And not even Church's Fucking Chicken, which they had last season, if you recall.
Yeah, these like Oakley and Weinstein, their years were a real cooling off of the merchandising. I remember just like there would be like a book or a CD, but as we get into the Scully years, that's when all of the toys start coming out. Like in the early 2000s, there's like a new wave of merch that just like is like a tsunami of Simpsons stuff.
By seasons 9 and 10, that's when they realized that the kids who bought Simpsons Mania were now adults who could buy, or at least young adults who could buy Simpsons shit again. But this is kind of in the quiet zone. And so the only commercials were, one, we already talked about, the 1-800-COLLECT one that aired with the season 7 premiere of Who Shot Mr. Burns Part 2, where Homer falls into the Grand Canyon. What a grand canyon. And the only other one is Internacional, which is honestly a disturbing one that I'm not going to play, which is, Bob, are you aware of the Vizier detergent ad from France?
No.
So for a couple of years in France, the Simpsons were licensed to advertise a clothes detergent called Vizier.
Was it yellow?
You know what? I didn't see what it looked like.
I would hope it was at least yellow. It's a weird tie-in.
It is. And so most of their ads were like print ads where they just took an old drawing of Marge and she's saying in French something like, hey, I don't want to wash these or whatever.
Now it's Marge's time to shine.
But they did do two animated commercials, which were animated by outside of the Simpsons animation staff even too. So the one that aired during season 7 is actually rather uncomfortable. And I would say don't look it up if you
really.
So the comedic conceit is that Marge needs to wash all their clothes. She tells them, give me all your clothes now. So they undress in the living room, but you don't see anything. And that is Homer, Bart, and Lisa.
Okay, we're getting uncomfortable now.
Then they cut into, but nothing happens. It's just her demanding their clothes. Cut to the backyard. Their clothes are on the line, and they are standing behind their clothes that are on the line, and is lined up the way their clothes are normally fitted on them. And they're going like, wow, my clothes are so clean, blah, 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 blah. Then Marge takes back the clothes, or the clothes fly off for some reason, leaving Homer, Bart, and Lisa naked on screen for just like a flash of a second. Homer and Lisa run away while Bart is left standing nude in the middle of the screen for a few seconds.
Can you see his doodle?
They actually don't draw his doodle in there, but it's really uncomfortable. I'm going to have to chalk it up to Lost in Translations. The French have different feelings.
Those
on this
Europeans.
Stuff. It's so European, but they're maybe drunk it's off funny of wine in France, and... but this was it was gross to read on the wiki the fun fact of this, and just like, this is the only time Lisa's been naked on the show.
Great.
Like, yeah, good. I'm glad it's only that.
I'm not having fun with that fact at all, but yeah, thanks, France.
Yeah, I'm sorry, but that's Vizier detergent, the only other commercial, and I mean, you can find it on YouTube, taped off TV, because it's not on any of the VHSs here, though. There was actually a statement in current articles at the time from Groening that he told them to not draw Bart anatomically. They're like, no, that's not how. Which then apparently he changed his mind when it was time to draw his doodle
for the movie.
Yes, yeah. What's the difference, say, 11 years makes?
Yeah. You loosen up. You want to see a boy's penis.
So anyway, those are the two commercials. What fun.
I have one announcement to make. It's a very boring announcement, but I think in the past couple of these, I've told people how long my documents are for these seasons.
Oh,
so
yes.
What I do in Google Docs for every season, honestly, I should just start making more than one for a season because they go on for so long. But every season of the show that we do, I have a new Google Doc. I wanted to announce how long this one is for season 7.
Oh boy.
It's 71 pages and 28,429 words. That's how many notes just for season 7 alone. So it's a lot of notes.
I didn't plan on doing this, but I'm going to look it up here. So my notes, I actually started a new notes now for season 8. Guys, we're working on season 8 as we're doing this. Surprise, surprise.
I started my doc before the last live show.
Whoa.
Yeah, because that's where I wrote my 21st Amendment notes, and you can listen to that on the Patreon.
But notes volume 3 for season 6 and 7 is, boy, it's loading up every page here. So this is for two seasons together, so it's a bit of cheating, but it is 213 pages.
Whoa.
43,498 words.
Damn.
Though I have more pages just because I like having it in bigger typeface. I have it at 18 font. So
you embiggened it.
Yes, I did. It was embiggened it for cromulent.
In case you're wondering, we don't half remember everything. We write down notes that we half remember from. So,
but that's the difference, man. The notes. You gotta be dedicated. Beginning podcasters out there, notes are your friends.
Like, oh yeah.
You should definitely be spontaneous on mic and be loose. But you know, it's nice to have notes to go back to.
As my brain gets older and it fails me, I need notes. Also, I'm always terrified of not having a thing to say or something to refer to. So it's never happened before, but I'm glad I have notes. But yes, when Talking Simpsons becomes a TV show, we will start selling these notes to you, like behind the scenes.
We'll just print. I love how some comedians will just print out, like, here's my emails. Those are so funny. It's like, are they that funny?
Or someone transcribes their jokes, like sign language or whatever. Bits, yeah.
I'll give it to Todd Glass because he just simply has too severe of ADD that he can't write a book. So he just dictated it all to a ghostwriter.
That's good.
But all right, let's wrap up the wrap up with each of our favorite and least favorite episodes, as well as our pick for the season MVP, the character who did the best this season.
As I said, it was very hard to choose a favorite because it's just a giant like plateau of goodness with no real valleys, and just it's all peaks here. So I'm going to cheat a little bit. I'll tell you what my runners-up are after I tell you what my favorite is. My favorite is 22 Short Films because it breaks the format and it tries to tell as many stories as possible, and I feel it's very successful. Also, Steamed Hams came out of it, and that is an immortal piece of comedy that will be memed forever. Sorry, Bill Oakley, the memes will not die.
You don't get to call when they die.
Yes.
That was another cool thing this season, that we got to see Bill Oakley become a food reviewer on Instagram during our recording of this season.
He's a real superstar. But my runners-up are Mother Simpson, because nothing guts me more than that last scene. It's also a very sweet episode, but that last scene kills me, and it will always kill me, even if I watch it 40 times. Other runner-up is Scenes from the Class Struggle in Springfield, because I feel like it is the best Marge episode. And again, as we said on that episode, it examines class in a way the Simpsons moved away from after like the second season. So I really like its examination of class, and also Marge in her inner life. So those are my favorites.
I like that one too. I also did get a runner-up with mine, and I hate to be a ripoff of Bob, but my winner too is 22 Short Films.
I don't blame you.
It packs in the most comedy. It shows you how big the show has grown and how much they can do. And of course, Steamed Hams. I mean, come on. But even without Steamed Hams, there's tons of funny shit in there. And my runner-up, I only had one runner-up, and that is Marge Be Not Proud, because it was the one that made me tear up the most in watch, even more than Mother Simpson. Mother Simpson got me, but Marge be not proud, especially when Marge, I'm choking up now, when Marge hugs Bart again and reaccepts him in the family, I'm like, oh, that's, I want my mom to hug me.
I mean, that could be a runner-up for me. To be fair, like, I think half the season is a runner-up for me in terms of favorite episode, but 22 short films, I think, is also important because we probably talked about this on the episode, but I feel like it was a gift to fans. Like, we don't have to explain who anyone is. You're going into the show knowing every character, and now we're going to have fun with them. Mm-hmm. So I feel like it was just sort of like fan service, but in a very productive, fun way. Like, no other showrunner would do this, you know, before.
Yeah, and I guess my other runner-up with, oh, and also in Marge Be Not Proud, the video game stuff is
it's pitch perfect.
It's pitch perfect. So much of its time, as a person who used to write about video games all the time, it's hard for me not to appreciate it from that angle. And my other runner-up is actually Bart Sells His Soul.
Oh, that's a great one. Greg Daniels.
It was Greg Daniels' last one. It's so weird, and then meanwhile, like, Moe's Family Feedback is so fucking funny.
That is great. Yes,
it is a great Greg Daniels-y rumination on the mundane of going to an Applebee's. Like, what's every joke we could do with a TGI Fridays type spot?
And like, The Office would really dig into that, right? Chili's.
Was a regular spot on the show. Yes. All right. So, least favorite episode.
I think we have the same least favorite episode, too, because we're wired the same way. But it's the obvious choice, but it's also not a bad episode.
No.
And you'll hear us talk about it on that that podcast. But I think it's Homer Palooza.
Yeah, I said it to you. It's my pick, too. Yes.
It's a less interesting Krusty Gets Canceled. Mm-hmm. And the resolution, they hang a lantern on it with "Designed to Hurt." Yes, but it's not a great payoff. And I got to say, I enjoy it a lot. I love it. But it's also, I feel like, it's like an A- compared to the A pluses of every other episode.
Yeah, I think they really learned a lesson there of like...
Wait, B+.
That Krusty Gets Canceled depended on guest stars who were mainly actors, or at least performers who could read lines. Meanwhile, with musicians, they play music and they can do on-stage banter, but they're not actors. They don't know how to say humidor.
We got to hear the classic song Zero on The Simpsons.
And yeah, it also is a little bit of jerk-ass indestructible Homer, and it's kind of the best jokes in it, other than "it'll happen to you." Some of my favorite jokes in it are just Marge hanging a lantern too on, like, you don't have to take this job, you know? Like, just because someone offers you to be in a freak show doesn't mean you have to do it, Homer.
I think later in later episodes, they would just not have that scene. Homer would just go off and do the thing without having to check in with Marge. But it is, I guess, like, they realized how tired they were, and it was sort of just a very loose episode. But the fact that the cannon misses Homer at the end, and we don't even see what happens to the cannonball, feels like another huge. I mean, they said on the commentary, like, it was going to do a bunch of unfunny things, so we cut it out. But it's just like, that cannonball has to go somewhere funny, and you missed it. You missed it.
Yeah. And this is the only season wrap up we've had to do where I don't have to have the caveat of, like, well, my least favorite can't count the clip show, because this clip show rules.
It's great.
Like, 138 is easily the best clip show they've ever done.
And we had a lot of fun with it too.
Yeah, it was tons of fun to chat about. I just love being with Troy McClure for that long. I mean, that's what damaged all future. I would bet, were Phil Hartman to have lived, he would have been a regular clip show host.
Yeah.
Because it's easy. It's an easy cheat.
And so many great jokes came out of the clip show. Like, they were never popular. And I use the phrase or the name Captain Wacky a lot.
Yes.
When talking about Homer. And there's just so much that came out of a clip show. Think of that another Simpsons clip show. There's not even one good joke that persisted throughout time. It's all filler.
Yep.
Yeah.
Nothing. All right. Season MVP, Bob. I really hope we're not on the same page.
Oh, no.
We might be.
This is very hard to do because I feel like Oakley and Weinstein were very fair to the entire cast in terms of not letting one person overpower any other character. And I feel like Merkin, those seasons were very heavy with Burns.
Yeah.
And I feel them easing off of Burns in these seasons, which I'm not a huge fan of, but I like that other characters are getting a chance to rise to the top. But I will say, I think Troy McClure could be my MVP because he gets his own episode. Mm-hmm. And also, I think they're using him a lot in this season for educational films. So I really think that they gave him a real chance to shine outside of the context of him being in an old movie.
Well, he got two episodes, 138 and
yes.
Fish Cult Summer.
You're right, you're right. There are two Troy episodes. No wonder that, like, that's the one thing that came to mind. I think runner-up would be Apu because they made him into a person in this season. But I do feel like Troy, they were just so in love with Troy and they loved Phil Hartman so much. And it sucks that Phil's gone. He's been gone for 20 years now as of this as of this fucking year.
Yeah.
But yes, Troy McClure is my number one MVP for the season.
Well, my MVP, meanwhile, is Milhouse.
Yeah, okay. I'm with you. I'm with you.
So we chatted about it with Dan Greaney a little bit, but this is a joke that The Simpsons is a show written by Milhouses for Milhouses. And I do think that because this is like the dorkiest season, it is the dorkiest showrunners, that it's when they really embraced Milhouse and they're like, we're not Bart, we're Milhouse.
Yeah.
And we're going to really up Milhouse jokes, that you start off the season like with Radioactive Man. He's so great in Radioactive Man as a sidekick and is Jimmy Jillikers. Yeah. And like, we did it. It's done.
It took 5 hours. Yeah.
And then almost right after that, Bart sells his soul as the malevolent, like, $50 and Alf Pogs.
No, Milhouse is great. You're right. You're totally right. And they actually start leaning into what would become his crush on Lisa.
Yep.
With Summer of 4 Foot Two.
And then also in 22 short films, he has some great scenes. His Hamburglar scene.
You gotta say yes.
His Bart on the Road stuff, like Don't Need You, Nerding It Up. That's taken. Or him in Summer 4 Foot Two as Nice Doggy. Or The Dud. And even in small parts, like his Take That, Dr. Sally Waxler.
That's right. I think Merkin's era had more fun just abusing Milhouse. Yes. But I think they're getting a lot more out of him than just like having him fall out of a ravine in in a Fugitive parody.
And in season 8, it only increases more. Like, I know they love making fun of Kirk Van Houten, but that's only in thanks to his relation to Milhouse. And same with how they're gonna bring up, like, they get so much speaking of them being Milhouses, they get so much out of Milhouse and Date with Density.
Yeah.
Of him like being the sad loser who doesn't get that a girl isn't due to be your girlfriend just because you have a crush on her and you're sad. It's really great. I'm really looking forward to season 8, just talking up these season 8 episodes.
Oh yeah, me too. Anything else we need to cover? Season 7, so good, so good. Mm-hmm. I just like every Bill Oakley and Josh Weinstein episode is a gift.
Yes, yeah.
And there are only so many of them.
No.
And I'll tell people, I am not, like, everyone asks us this and it's a question that I feel I'll get the answer. It's like, what do you do when the show gets bad? I'm honestly looking forward to Mike Scully's years. I feel like we're going to be revisiting them with fresh eyes. One of the things that happened to me in the Bob Mackey timeline is season 8 is when I start high school. And I'll tell you what, those weren't happy years for another Milhouse type like me. So I feel like revisiting these episodes as a mellowed out adult and not a depressed teenager or not like an angry man in his 20s, I feel like I will appreciate them a lot more and I will enjoy them a lot more.
We'll have a lot more removed from it now. Will I complain about Homer getting raped by a panda? Yes.
We'll complain about that, of course.
When that day comes. But I do think we'll be more fair, and it probably helps that Mike Scully was maybe the nicest person we've ever interviewed. No offense to every other interview we did, which was great. I think he was the nicest person.
And he forgave us for being mean to him on the internet.
Yeah, he's just a cool older guy. I like that. And he's a working class guy. Also, just as I realized like how many of these dudes are Harvard dudes, it has made me identify more with Scully of like, well, if I was on the Simpsons writing staff, I'd be Mike Scully, not any of the Harvard guys.
He was the regular dad in his late 30s amongst all these like Harvard dorks in their late 20s.
Yeah.
So it was a much different sense of humor, but also he didn't know anybody. He got in through sheer gumption.
But that is season 9. And season 8, what we're going into is, we're getting into the head in the pole. No, we're getting into Citizen Kang. We're getting into Date with Density, Hurricane Nettie, You Only Move Twice.
Yeah, special guest for that one.
Yes.
I'll tell you what.
Yeah, as you listen to this, Bob and I are just hours away from getting on an airplane to LA to record for a whole week there. And you guys are going to hear some really cool stuff come out of that, I do declare.
Did we mention Homer's Enemy?
No. Oh,
okay,
yeah. Oh, yes. My God. This season's Homer's Enemy as
so
well.
Much good stuff.
And Poochie.
Yes, Poochie. Okay, man. I'm looking forward to 8 so much. But thanks for listening, everybody. And we'll see you with our next season wrap-up much, much later. Thank you.